This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Yes, good afternoon, a beautiful Saturday here on Joy 94.9. My name is Pete Dillon. This is Cravings, of course. It is a beautiful day outside. 21 degrees currently, I believe, and it looks stunning right here in the city. Stick with me. We've got a great show for you today. Kicking off with a fellow by the name of Ben Krause. He's from Bridge Road Brewers in Beechworth. That's a hard sentence for someone like me. Talking about a microbrewery showcase which is being held this month in Federation Square. We'll talk to Ben shortly. Also joining me is the vineyard manager from Shelmardine. His name is Andrew Smith, and he's going to be talking to us about Shedfest. Shedfest is an event that's happening this weekend, so if you feel like jumping in the car and heading yourself to Warburton into the Yarra Valley, it's a glorious day for a drive, and there are some great events happening there. Andrew will fill us in on what's happening there as well. And we're also going to meet Matt Waldron from Lulo. Lulo is a beer, wine and tapas bar that has been around for now about 5 years in Glenferrie Road in Hawthorne, doing some great stuff. So we're going to meet Matt Waldron. He is the chef and owner, and he's a man that's a bit obsessed by all things Spanish. 0427 Joy 949 is the text number. You can ring 1300 Joy 949. You can email on air at joy.org.au, or you can indeed send a tweet to cravings_joy949. But first of all, the foodie news. And it seems the former Lord Mayor John So is in a bit of strife. He's been charged with running a dirty restaurant by the very council that he used to lead. Melbourne City Council has filed charges against Mr. So and a company he's a director of over food safety breaches at the Dragon Boat on the Yarra restaurant. The case was adjourned this week in the Melbourne Magistrates Court because Mr. So's barrister was unavailable to represent him, it seems. So details of the allegedly unhygienic practices could not be read out in the court. But it's not the first time one of Mr. So's restaurants has come under the glare of Melbourne Council for breaching food regulations. In 2004, another company of which he was the director was fined $75,000 for breaches of the Food Act at two Dragon Boat restaurants with which Mr. So had a long history of involvement. Not sure whether you heard, but this week is National Organic Week, and Chef Toby Puttock from 15 here in Melbourne is urging Australians to get out and taste organic food. This week as part of the National Organic Week celebrations. He is on board as the official National Organic Week ambassador, and he says he believes organic is the best choice for people when selecting produce. Quoted in The Australian this week, "The reason I choose organic myself is because I know it's the best possible flavours we can get out of those vegetables," said Puttock. "I think it's really important for people during this week to actually get out and try organic. I would recommend just switching one product a week. If you're eating bananas every week, start eating organic bananas, and then the next week, perhaps you could put organic avocados into the mix, the week after that, lettuce, and slowly work into it." Puttock says if you can taste the difference, feel the difference, and make a difference, you're on the way to living a better lifestyle. Good on him. A range of events have been underway all week in communities around Australia as part of the event aimed at increasing awareness of organic food, being run by the Biological Farmers of Australia in collaboration with the Centre for Organic and Resource Enterprises. The 2010 Australian Event Awards were held this week, and apart from the Byron Bay Blues Fest, 21st Blues Fest, taking the top gong, along with Sydney World Masters Games, the Melbourne 2010 Good Food and Wine Show was also a winner. Top event for the whole shebang was that girl coming home on her boat, the Jessica Watson girl. Don't really care for that, but best achievement in catering was the Melbourne Convention and Exhibition Centre for the 2010 Good Food and Wine Show. The French beverage group Pernod Ricard has moved to arrest the decline in sales of its leading wine brands. Business pages this week said, including the Australian label Jacob's Creek, and it has restructured its disparate operations to create a global premium wine division. Pernod Ricard announced this week that following a strategic review of its global operations, its key international wine properties would be grouped and managed under one business that will be known as premium wine brands. This is all according to The Australian. Along with Jacobs Creek, other labels coming under the new umbrella will include Brancott Estate, who you may know as Montana, producers of New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, amongst other things. Campo Viejo, Grafinia, Stoneleigh, also from New Zealand, Wyndham Estate and Etchart. The restructure follows similar moves in the beverage industry across the board to help limit the decline in global wine sales and breathe new life into well-known labels that have suffered in the onslaught of that dreaded global financial crisis. Earlier this week, Foster's also announced a reorganisation of its European wine operations, creating three autonomous regions to give greater focus to its business on the continent. The Australian, whose company is catering for the Commonwealth Games Athletes Village, has defended the standard of the food after several competitors came down with what was called the infamous Deli Belly. At least six Australian swimmers have suffered some form of gastro problem, with several of them actually coming home. Andrew Lauterstein withdrew from the 50 metres fly final this week. Rob Hurley and Ryan Napoleon also were others with the dreaded Deli Belly, and Hurley opting out of the 15 metre freestyle later in the program. Also, what was supposed to be a great gold medal chance for us, one of our backstrokers has always also come home. So English swimmer Fran Housel, she suffered a dose of gastro as well, but she still went on to win a surprise gold medal in the women's 50 fly earlier this week. A defensive Rick Aylett, who is the director of catering company Delaware North, said the food at the village had been stringently tested and he had received no complaints from athletes. He said the link made by media between Hurley's departure from the Games and food in the village was unsubstantiated. They've conducted about 700 independent food sample tests. They've been sent to an independent lab since September 12, and all tests have come back negative, and all of the food samples have, in fact, met international standards, he said to reporters just Wednesday. In Epicure this week, Larissa DeBecker reports that Jason Williams, who is the head bartender at Melbourne Cocktail Lounge, The Galley Room, has been named the nation's best bartender for 2010 at the Australian Bar Awards after a competition that included exams, blind tastings and cocktail mixing. Williams pipped to the field, including competition from Sydney's Ivy and Melbourne's Gin Palace. Perhaps I shouldn't have gone to the Gin Palace after the village people last night. With his winning drink, the Gary Cooper, which contained Remy Martin VSOP cognac, blueberry jam, yes, that's right, blueberry jam, orange bitters, lemon juice, and Mozart dry white chocolate spirit, shaken and all served up in a jam jar. Yes, in a jam jar. All good fun, let me tell you, all good fun. So yes, that's our very own Jason Williams heading off to the... is there an international competition? Maybe I just made that up. I'm sorry. And, excuse me, I'm just having some trouble speaking here at the minute. Circus head sommelier of the past 6 years, Liam O'Brien, is moving on. Liam says he has no concrete plans, but he has a few irons in the fire. One of them involves the imminent release of the first wine under the business name Athletes of Wine with Matt Brook, who last week resigned from his position as sommelier at Brisbane's Ortega ahead of a return to Melbourne. We've taken the name from a quote from in a Hugh Johnson book, The Story of Wine, about a class of character in London many years ago that seemed determined to drink every type of wine in the world, says O'Brien, who finishes up this week at Circa. That's thanks to Larissa DeBecky at Epicure. And in sad news, and the final bit of news, the bartending community is mourning the passing of the Ivy bartender Pierre Falhoun, who died this week in a motorcycle accident. The winner of numerous bartending competitions, Falhoun recently won the right to represent Australia at the annual International Bartending Association World Classic Flair Cocktail Awards. Competition in Singapore in November. So to all of those associated with Pierre, our deepest sympathy from this program. I went and had a bit of a boogie last night because the village people were in town and I went and saw them. And one of the things I did was have a couple of beers. You may think that is neither here nor there, but coming up in just a few weeks in Federation Square at the Atrium, there will be a microbreweries showcase. That's the 20th and 21st of October, so just a couple of weeks away. Joining me to talk about that showcase and from one of the brewers involved is Ben Krause. He is from Bridge Road Brewers in Beechworth. Ben, good afternoon and welcome to Cravings.
How are you going?
Good, thank you. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, Bridge Road... I'm having so much trouble saying that. Bridge Road Brewers at Beechworth.
Yeah, Bridgerow Brewers is a craft brewery, so a small microbrewery or boutique brewery. We're located in Beechworth in northeast Victoria. We're all about making good beer and trying to push the boundaries a little bit in beer styles and providing a good atmosphere. We've got a venue up in Beechworth where we have a bar and a, I guess a cellar door facility, and we mm-hmm. sell loads of beer down to Melbourne as well.
Am I right to assume that you actually started this business about 6 years ago in your dad's shed?
Yeah, we started behind my parents' house in his garage and set up the brewery there, and we lasted about 12 months in that spot and outgrew it pretty quickly and moved into the centre of town.
So you say the centre of town, you're actually located in a 150-year-old coach house and stables behind the Tanswalls Commercial Hotel.
Yeah, that's correct. We're it's currently being... Everything's being dragged out of it and setting up for tomorrow's Oktoberfest. We've got our big Oktoberfest on this weekend. So
terrific.
The coach house is a good venue for that. We've just got to move all the beer stock out of the way so we can fit in the people. So doing that presently.
Very good. So let's talk briefly about the microbrewery showcase, because you are involved. There's probably about 15 different breweries involved.
I think there might even be more at the showcase this time around. There's... As you may well know, or other people may know as well, there seems to be more and more craft brewers popping up in Victoria every few months. I think there was about 18 last count.
I've just counted my list. There's actually 20, so there you go.
So it's really just about getting out and tasting beers that are different to what people might be used to, and seeing what these small breweries have got to offer. It's a really good, fun event, and gives people the chance to taste beers that you can't otherwise get all in the one venue on the one night. So it's really well worth it. If you're into beer, it's not to be missed.
Good. Now, I'm into beer, so trust me, it won't be missed. It's supported by Regional Development Victoria. Now, this event, I've mentioned that there's 20 microbreweries. We're very familiar with the boys at Two Brothers in Moorabbin, who will be there. And places like Mildura Brewery, now that's my hometown. That's a fair way for them guys to travel for... just to come up for that showcase. Why do you think that boutique beer has taken off in such a big way, Ben?
It's probably a combination of factors in that there's more small breweries popping up and they're sort of pushing themselves into the market. So that's part of it. And it's also the consumer wanting to have different flavours and be challenged with beer as they are with other products. So I'm sure it's the same in the wine industry. Well, the wine industry is probably a long way ahead in that sense. There's bars that are really pushing and wanting to have high quality and different types of beers in their bars. So that's one part of it. There's consumers that are wanting to have different experiences when they have a drink. And there's also brewers out there who want to show people, you know, what beer can really be like if you do things differently.
So we're clearly moving away from our overconsumption of, you know, the big labels with two letters in them and green cans.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's sort of a theme that runs throughout food. People want to know what goes into their food and where it comes from more and more. And I was just saying to someone the other day, people are starting to get picky over what chocolate they eat. They say their preferred percentage of cocoa in their chocolate. That was never a thing of the past, and I'm sure it wasn't for beer, but now people are really deciding whether they like IPAs or American pale ales or porters or red beers and so on. So it's just a trend that's happening throughout the food and beverage industry, and it's just crossed over to beer.
Which is, probably it's jolly well about time, I would suggest.
Yeah, no doubt. Well,
we've become far more concerned about the provenance of food, about organics, about fair trade. So all of the bits and pieces that go into making your beer, your hops and grains and things, and are they all local, or are they something that still travels a bit of distance?
It depends. For us, it depends on the style of beer we're making. If we're trying to make a beer that's German, for example, or German in style, we really source our beer from that country. We find it hard to get it exactly like those beers if we try to use domestic products. But in any other beer styles we do, we try to source things locally when we can. And also, especially with hops, we've got a local hop producer here in the region near Beechworth, so we try to use them when we can. And we also have lots of chestnut farms, and we've developed a beer using chestnuts here.
There you go. This is a beautiful segue. I was about to speak to you about chestnuts, because you're making an Australian pilsner that that is where you use locally grown chestnuts?
Yeah, that was something, I mean, one of our weaknesses is also one of our strengths in terms of, you know, getting to the marketplace. We're quite away from Melbourne, which is a big part of the craft beer market in Australia. And on some things we can't compete, such as costs for transport and so on and so forth. But one thing we do have in our favour is that we have local produce grown right next door to where the brewery is. And one of those things is chestnuts. So we developed a beer using chestnuts and sort of trying to take advantage of local produce and things that set us apart from other breweries.
One of the other favourites of mine is the multi award winning or medal winning, I guess you would say, Celtic Red, which is it's got a lovely sort of, one might say it's a bit caramelly or it's a bit Jaffa like. It's a very interesting red ale. Tell us about red ale.
Yeah, the red ale that most people would be familiar with, we make an Irish-style red ale.
Mm-hmm.
The red ale most people familiar with would be Kilkenny. It's an Irish-style red ale and probably the only one that's really readily available in Australia. We've just, created our own take on that style. It's a beer that sort of shows malt characters. There's lots of beers that are hoppy or yeasty and other things, but that's definitely a malty beer, and we do use caramelised malts that give that Jaffa or caramel and toffee character. The red ale is really popular, especially for people who are sort of crossing over from beers that perhaps aren't so strong in flavour. It's a really good beer to get people thinking differently about what they drink and how they drink.
Excellent. And no thoughts of rebadging it now for our Prime Minister?
There's already a beer called Ranger out there, actually.
Yeah, there is a beer. That's made by another microbrewer, which I think, from memory, will they be there? Southern Bay Brewing Company, who will also be at this microbrewery showcase that's on at Federation Square.
Yeah, they'll have their Ranger Red. I don't know if she's a beer fan. I know she follows me on Twitter, but I've tried to entice her into some discussion about beer tax and excise, but I haven't got any
good luck with that. I reckon she might be fond of a beer. She doesn't mind an afternoon at the footy, so footy can't be footy, and the Western Bulldogs, her team, obviously can't be footy without beer. Ben, so we better tell people where this is. First of all, your website.
Our web address is all the W's, bridgeroadbrewers.com.au. I'm not sure the Fed Square.
I've got that one in front of me. So if people want to know a bit more about Bridge Road Brewers in Beechworth, it's a very hard thing to say. That's
www.
Yeah, well, thankfully it's only 1 o'clock in the afternoon, so I haven't had any yet, but still recovering from a bit of a misbehaviour last night. Ben, thanks so much, and I hope that we can see some people get along and try some of your fantastic beer.
All right, thanks for the call.
Good on you. Thanks, Ben.
Bye.
That's Ben Krause. He is from Bridge Road Brewers in Beechworth. I just am struggling to say that. As mentioned, 20 and 21st of October 2010 will be the microbreweries showcase at Federation Square in the atrium from 4:30 p.m. You can go to www.fedsquare.com.au. Now, we have spoken already about something happening in a few weeks with beer, but one of my favourite events each year is something called Shedfest. It happens around the Yarra Valley on the picturesque Warburton Highway. The area is home to some of the most inviting wineries in the region, and it's a great time to visit during this very weekend. It's a beautiful day. It's Saturday. It's 21 degrees. I think you should pop yourself in your car and head yourself down to the Warburton Highway. It's only about an hour. Joining me to talk about the Shedfest event, which is happening this weekend, is Andrew Smith. He is the vineyard manager at Shelmerdine. Andrew, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pete. How are you?
Good. Were you rocking out to that little bit of YMCA?
Yeah, mate, you better believe it.
I can just see you. You're not in the car, I hope, or on a tractor.
No. I just walked away from the tractor, so out clear.
Excellent.
Looking over the view from the Shedfest site down to the north, to Healesville.
Now, let's talk about Shedfest, because it's an interesting concept. There's probably seven or eight participating wineries.
We've got about 10 wineries along the Warburton Highway, and it sort of evolved because they're all smaller wineries, ourselves included,
mm-hmm.
and we've all got sheds. and they're all sort of full of tractors and barrels and so forth, and we thought it would be fun to invite people along to see what we get up to and try some of our wares and put on a bit of a festival along the way at our individual sites.
Well, a jolly good idea, I think. So it's running over this weekend, so today and tomorrow.
That's right.
And you've got, like you said, 10 wineries involved. So people can take a sort of leisurely cruise along the Warburton Highway. Of course, not drinking, because at each of the events there will be, I guess there's going to be some entertainment, there's going to be some fun and the games along the way.
Oh, absolutely. We've got each of the wineries, if not caterers themselves, but teams up with a caterer to provide particular meals to suit their wares. Everyone's got a band or a musician or two, some lovely coffee on offer. And you mentioned the transport issue. Now, people obviously are welcome to drive themselves. We have the TAC designated driver program in operation.
Yep.
Where the designated driver can be winning themselves some wine to share with their non-drivers.
Oh, that's kind.
Also, there's a TAC shuttle bus which runs from Lilydale Station, which will be visiting each winery about, I think 8 or 10 times each day.
Oh, well, that's clearly the way to go.
Yeah, so get yourself to Lilydale Railway Station and jump the bus, or even some people last year parked their car at a certain winery and then jumped on the bus and did a few laps around about and then came back and their designated driver took them home.
Fantastic. And, of course, there are great accommodation opportunities in the Yarra Valley itself.
You know, I heard a figure the other day, and I think it was something like 3,500 beds in the valley.
Well, if we can't fill some of those, then there's something terribly wrong. So the festival's been going for 8 years. Obviously, to showcase some of the unique characteristics of each of the wineries that are participating. But you make an interesting point. It's all about the sheds, because we assume that the sheds are full of tractors and bits and pieces that wine presses and old bottles and corks, I'm assuming. So it's quite a relaxed sort of weekend and something that would well suit the novice wine drinker.
Oh, absolutely. Look, most of the wineries, I think, would cover a range of styles, from what you might call the more introductory styles, or a little bit more fruit-driven, through to some of the more serious wines. In our case at Chelmondine, I think we've got about 14 different wines on offer this weekend.
Yep.
Now, that's covering an extended range. We only grow 3 varieties, of which we make 4 wines from on site, but we've broadened our range somewhat. So, hopefully for the weekend.
You guys have wineries both in the Yarra Valley and in Heathcote, yeah?
Well, that's correct. We've snuck down a few of our Heathcote wines too for the diehard Shiraz drinkers.
Well, that's a bit cheeky.
Well, yeah, look, none of the other wineries are listening. So.
No, I'm sure they won't. If people want some more information, obviously they can go to wineyarravalley.com and have a look at Shedfest.
Yeah, sure, there's a Shedfest link on that site.
There is. And a bit of toe-tapping to some music too, I understand.
There certainly will be, yes. Absolutely. I was just speaking to our musician about 20 minutes ago, and
right.
He's had a great time.
So it's not going to be the Village People, and there'll be no opportunity for the YMCA, will there?
Probably not. No, but you never know. I won't rule anything out.
No, you should never, especially when there is wine consumption involved. So, again, you're running today, Saturday, and tomorrow, Sunday, so people can jump in the car this afternoon, head down. Is there any events on tonight, Saturday night?
Not connected with Shedfest, but there's usually a few things on in the valley for those who want to stay overnight.
Excellent.
Some wonderful restaurants and hotels in town, up the Warby Highway and certainly across into Hillsville and down Yarra Glenway. So there's certainly enough to do if you want to stay the night.
Excellent. All right. Andrew, thank you so much for your time.
Good day. Thanks, mate.
Have a fun weekend.
I will do.
Good on you.
Bye.
That's Andrew Smith. He is the vineyard manager from Shelmardine, talking there about Shedfest. And, of course, jump in the car. It's a beautiful day. Take a drive down the valley. Stay the night and then spend Sunday just being driven around in the TAC vehicle, having yourself a jolly good time and tasting some wines from the 10 or so wineries involved in Shedfest. The reason I played a track called Spanish Joint is because I recently found one in Glenferrie Road in Hawthorne, and let me tell you, pretty damn good. Its name is Lulo. It's a tapas, cevicheria, and a wine bar. Cevicheria, for the uninitiated, is a beer bar, basically. And
The man behind it all is a fellow by the name of Matt Waldron. He's a pretty talented chef. He's the owner, and I've got him on the blower. Matt, good afternoon. Welcome to Cravings.
Hey, Pete. How are you? How are you doing?
Good, mate. How's your Saturday afternoon travelling on this beautiful 21-degree day?
Fantastic. Just gearing up for a big night.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear. Now, let's talk a little about Lulo, because you guys are doing... Are you still doing degustation gatherings?
Yes, we are. We've got one more for the year, which will be first Monday of November.
Excellent. And this is the first Monday of November. That's Melbourne Cup Eve, if my memory serves me correct. The 1st of November. That's a jolly good night to go then, because most people will have the day off the next day to go to the Clippity Clops.
Excellent.
Now, the degustations, you generally pair with a small Australian wine producer, small Victorian wine producer, I should say.
Yep.
In presenting wine and food.
Yeah. This one will be more focused on Spanish wine.
Yep.
And just a couple of wines from Argentina.
Nice. Where's your influence? Because there's a lot of Spain and Latin America and Portugal and sort of whoever's banging in the background is bloody loud. There's a lot of that that influence, not just in your food, but in the beer. There's, I think, 25 beers?
Yeah, there's about 25. Yeah, look, my wife, she's Colombian, but, I mean, I travelled through to South America and then sort of found a bit of a connection with the food, and I basically wanted to go to Spain then, and when I went to Spain, I seen, again, a connection between both worlds, and basically I loved the share plate sort of thing going on in Melbourne 4 years ago, so I decided to open a venue and put my, I suppose, twist on it. So, yeah, we share sort of flavours, I suppose, from both countries, but just my interpretation.
And your interpretation is pretty good, because you're just, you're no more Spanish than I am. Nice white boy from Australia. So there's obviously the two cultures. There's a Spanish culture and a Latin American culture, and some may assume that there is quite a similarity between the two, but there are, in fact, quite distinct differences as well.
Yeah, very distinct differences, but, I mean, my play is, I suppose, the ingredients, I think, that I use, and the style, and, sometimes the rusticness of South America versus the finesse of, Spain and, the robust sort of flavours of Spain, so, mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about the ingredients. You mentioned that you have quite a consideration. You're very concerned about the provenance of food.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I mean, with South America, all the things that, from South America that originate from South America, like your pulses, your peppers, tomatoes, even cassava, which is a root vegetable from South America that we often use, things like that. There's the colour really comes from South America, I suppose,
mm-hmm.
Where Spain, they specialise, I suppose, in, curing things and drying things and, like your salt cods, your paprikas, your jamons, mahama, things like that. And you would be lost without their olive oils and things like that, plus their good wine as well.
I think we'd be lost without a lot of things that come out of Spain, including guys like Ferran Adrià and Andoni Adruiz, both well-known restaurants, El Bulli and Mugaritz. So you've got a little bit into some of that that sort of fancy business of foams and things, haven't you?
Yeah. Look, I mean, I've never said I'm a traditionalist.
Nobody accused you of such,
sir. Yeah. I'm more like to play on that sort of modern interpretation of the food. So, playing with some of the stuff, from Ferran and stuff is just a side hobby, and I sometimes introduce it into the food, but I don't go too crazy with it. But, look, I'm a person that likes a bit of visual. I like a bit of design when it comes to my food. And I love, the surprises on people's faces when they eat the food. That's the main thing, I think. That's what sort of touches home for me.
If I was to mention that I was there recently, which I shouldn't, I was there for your previous degustation dinner, and one of the things that inspired me was you had a little sort of red, like a red pepper jelly, I think it was, or a blood orange jelly, and it was sitting underneath a glass container full of smoke.
Yep.
How do you come up with the idea of having that smoke sitting there so that when the little lid is lifted off, there's this huge waft of... Was it rosemary?
Yeah, it was rosemary, yeah. I suppose when I design something or I have a concept to the food, I like to incorporate a different texture, a different taste, smell or flavour. So I would prefer to sort of, you know, have something written fairly simple and then have the surprise in the end. That's just kind of the way I suppose I work internally, you know, if you think of it like that. I just like to sort of incorporate things in a different manner. It doesn't always have to just be on your fork. So
and food is a you know, if we're to be frankly honest, food is very much a sensory experience rather than just it being something that is smelled or tasted. It's combining all of those things.
Yeah, it definitely should be combined with all those things. I mean, the normal, I suppose, I shouldn't say normal, the humans like salty, sweet, sour, and sometimes crunchy. You know, crunch stimulates the mind. The sweet, the sour is a balance, the salt is a stimulant. And
bit of umami?
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I try to think about every dish that sort of tries to incorporate some of that. So, you know, it's a winner, it's a no-brainer.
Is it hard to sculpture a dish like that?
Yeah, I suppose it is, but I think just, you know, over a bottle of wine, you'd be surprised what I can come up with.
Yeah, that's my favourite expression, over a bottle of wine, because it seems to be how I come up with most thoughts in my life. So, obviously, Monday the 1st is your final digger station for the year. Yep. People can log on to
www.lulo.com.au.
And they can find out all about the restaurant. There's some images there they can have a look at. And they can get in touch with you that way.
Yeah, definitely.
And
they can do that, and they can always call the restaurant on 9818.
Well, you'll get me in trouble.
Yep.
I'll have to speak over you there, so you don't.
Yeah, that's right.
And, okay. Of course, the fabulous Nikki will look after them on the floor as well.
Yeah, exactly.
She's a good egg, that one. Matt, thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure.
And continued success with the business.
Great, thanks very
good
much.
Good on you. That's Matt Waldron. He is the chef and owner of Lulo, and I can testify to the fact that the food is very good. Now, I don't want that to sound at all like an ad. That was talking about the influence of Spanish and Iberian, Portuguese, Latin American food on somebody who doesn't come from that background. And I thought it interesting to speak to Matt because he presents and creates some extraordinary food that does have some wonderful textures, colours and flavours.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.